We Are Not From Here has been hailed as one of the most powerful migration narratives of our time, earning spots on numerous best books lists and garnering praise from luminaries like Elizabeth Acevedo, who called it a poignant, unforgettable journey. Jenny Torres Sanchez's haunting novel was inspired by the 2014 humanitarian crisis when thousands of unaccompanied minors arrived at the U.S. southern border. The daughter of immigrants herself, Sanchez crafts a narrative that puts human faces to migration statistics, showing readers the desperation that drives people to risk everything for a chance at safety. The book resonated deeply with readers and critics alike, with the New York Times praising its unflinching portrayal of the brutal journey many migrants endure. Its cultural impact extends beyond literary circles, as it's been adopted in schools nationwide to help students understand the complex realities of migration and survival. When you live in a place where violence is as common as breathing, escape becomes more than a dream. It becomes a survival strategy. In Puerto Barrios, Guatemala, teenagers Pulga, Chico, and Pequeña exist in a world where beauty and brutality coexist in jarring proximity. The cold Coca-Colas from Don Felicio's store and the uniquely blue sky overhead stand in stark contrast to the blood turning brown on concrete and people disappearing only to reappear in fragments. For Pulga, whose name means flea, life revolves around his artistic dreams and caring for his cousin Chico, who wears his too small American Eagle shirt with innocent pride. Pulga's mother has always told him he has an artist's heart, a compliment delivered with a smile that's simultaneously proud, happy, and sad, as though she knows his sensitivity makes him vulnerable in their harsh reality. Pequeña, whose life intersects with the boy's, has just given birth to a baby she refuses to acknowledge, the result of sexual assault by a local gang leader named Ray. When she first discovered her pregnancy after falling from a bus, she confessed her despair to Pulga. "We are small people with small names, meant to live small lives." This sentiment captures the suffocating reality they all face. A world where dreams are dangerous luxuries and survival requires keeping your head down. The catalyst for their journey comes when Pulga and Chico witness the brutal murder of Don Felicio, a beloved store owner whose throat is slashed by Ray and his brother Nestor. The boys hide their blood-soaked clothes and attend the wake, where the murdered man's wife, Donna Agostina, shares a disturbing vision. Pequeña riding away on a bloody mattress, and the boys running scared. "Que corran," she warns, "they must run." This world is rendered with such visceral detail that we can feel the oppressive heat, taste the fear, and understand why these teenagers would risk everything to escape. Their Guatemala isn't just a place of danger, it's a place where staying means certain death or forced participation in the very violence they despise. When Ray and Nestor discover the boys witness the murder, they give them an impossible choice: join Ray's army or die. In this moment, escape becomes their only option. The decision to flee doesn't come easily. It tears at the very fabric of family bonds and shatters long-held dreams of home. For Pulga, it means abandoning his mother with nothing but a hastily written letter, knowing she'll wake to an empty bed and unanswered questions. For Pequeña, it means leaving behind her newborn son, still pink and new to the world, entrusting him to her mother's care while carrying the weight of maternal guilt. For Chico, it means following his cousin into the unknown, leaving behind the only security he's ever known in the familiar streets of their neighborhood. Pequeña's situation crystallizes the brutal calculus of survival that many face. Ray, her attacker turned tormentor, has transformed from neighborhood menace to immediate threat. After sexually assaulting her and fathering her child, he now seeks to cement his control through forced marriage. "This ring is your destiny," he declares, sliding a massive diamond on her finger, a gaudy symbol not of love, but of ownership and oppression. The ring's weight on her finger feels like a noose tightening. When Polga and Chico appear on a sputtering motor scooter, their faces etched with fear and urgency, she has mere seconds to choose between certain captivity and possible freedom. The night of their departure unfolds in a series of quietly devastating moments, each weighted with unspoken farewells. Polga performs his nightly ritual one last time, saying buenas noches to his mother with practiced casualness while his heart hammers in his chest. See you in the morning, hijo. Si Dios quiere, she responds, God willing, those routine words now heavy with unconscious prophecy. In her small bathroom, Bikania transforms herself with desperate determination, cutting away her long hair until a boy's face stares back from the mirror. Her severed ponytail remains behind like a ghost of her former self. Their exodus begins on a pre-dawn bus, Puerto Barrios dissolving into a blur of memories through grimy windows. They pass the Comedor Rosa, where Pequeña and her mother shared countless plates of chiles rellenos, the whitewashed church where her parents exchanged vows in happier times, the clinic where she first heard her baby's heartbeat. Each landmark carries the weight of a life being abandoned. First steps, birthday celebrations, ordinary afternoons that now seem precious in their simplicity. What makes these choices so devastating is their fundamental unfairness. They're made not in pursuit of the American dream, but in desperate flight from immediate danger. These teenagers harbor no illusions about a welcoming embrace at the border. They flee because staying means either death or moral death, becoming the very monsters they fear. The choice to leave is really no choice at all. It's survival instinct stripped bare, the last desperate grasp at preserving not just their lives, but their essential humanity in a world that seems determined to grind it away. The violence they flee isn't abstract. It's embodied in familiar faces. Childhood friends turned gang members, neighbors who now demand protection money, former classmates who disappear without explanation. Their hometown has become a maze of invisible boundaries and deadly consequences, where every street corner holds the potential for confrontation and every friendly face might mask ulterior motives. The journey north is dominated by La Bestia, the Beast, the network of freight trains that migrants ride through Mexico toward the U.S. border. This mechanical monster becomes both their salvation and potential destroyer, a symbol of the brutal journey that breaks people even as it delivers them to new life. Their first encounter with La Bestia comes after a harrowing trip through Mexico, dodging checkpoints by running through fields at night. When they finally see the train, the dusty steel beast that will carry us north, they must race alongside the tracks as it groans to life. Pulga goes first, grabbing onto a metal ladder and climbing to the top. Chico struggles, missing the bar twice before finally getting on. Pequeña runs behind, her abdomen tightening with pain, refusing to leave Chico behind even as the train speeds up. The beast seemed to breathe beside me, Pequeña recalls, threatening to pull me under its wheels. When she finally grabs the bar and climbs to join the others, they howl and holler in victory along with everyone else on top of the train. In this moment, they are luchadores, fighters who dare to try against impossible odds. Life aboard La Bestia is a constant battle against elements and exhaustion. The burning sun and whipping tree branches leave them battered and dehydrated. At night, they huddle together as those on the edges push toward the center, creating a desperate pulse as they press against each other. With each turn and jerk of the train, they risk falling to their deaths. The dangers aren't just physical. When headlights appear alongside the train, screams of narcos, kidnappers, la migra erupt as panic spreads. Later, the train screeches to a halt and chaos erupts as gunshots pierce the night. They scramble down ladders and run into the darkness, hiding in tall grass as men search for migrants. They hear the terrifying sounds of a family being captured, the same family they'd seen moments before. La Bestia becomes a metaphor for the migration journey itself, a necessary monster that might deliver them to their dreams or destroy them in the attempt. As one migrant tells them, el viaje es muy feo, the journey is very ugly. Yet they persist because the alternative, returning to the violence they fled, is unthinkable. The physical and emotional toll of the journey transforms each character in profound ways. For Chico, the journey ultimately claims his life. For Pulga and Pequena, it strips away their innocence but also reveals their extraordinary resilience. Chico's death comes suddenly and brutally. As the train screeches to a stop, he topples forward and falls off the side. Pulga jumps off the still-moving train, running desperately back along the tracks. When they reach Chico, his leg is mangled beyond recognition, blood everywhere. Though a priest and woman try desperately to save him with CPR and defibrillator paddles, Chico dies in Pulga's arms, smiling at him one last time, telling him not to worry. This loss nearly destroys Pulga's will to continue. At Chico's funeral, Father Jimenez speaks of him being safe now in God's hands, but Pulga questions how God could let this happen, why they have to die to finally be safe. For 3 days after, he says nothing, retreating into grief and guilt. Pequena experiences her own transformation through trauma. After Chico's death, she cuts her hair even shorter, embracing her disguise as protection. When she's later separated from Pulga in the desert, she has a mystical experience where she feels herself leaving her body, floating upward into the cool desert night. She sees La Bruja, the witch-like figure who has appeared in her vision since childhood, who takes her hand and fills her with strength. The journey also forces them to confront difficult moral questions. When they encounter other vulnerable migrants, a woman with a small child, an elderly man, they must decide whether to help or protect themselves. You want to be around when one of them drops dead like the old man back there, or worse? Pulga snaps when Chico questions why they left others behind. His words hit Pequena like knives, but she acknowledges he's right, though Chico is also right that we shouldn't be like that. This moral ambiguity pervades their journey. To survive, they must sometimes act in ways that conflict with their values. Yet even as the journey hardens them, it also reveals their fundamental decency, their refusal to become like Ray, to sacrifice their humanity for survival. Amid the brutality of their journey, moments of unexpected kindness shine like beacons. These encounters with compassionate strangers remind them and us that humanity persists even in the darkest circumstances. At a shelter in Mexico, they meet Soledad, a woman who immediately recognizes Chico's concussion and insists they stay while he recovers. For 7 days, she nurses him back to health, shearing their hair to rid them of lice and cooking nourishing meals. When Pequena tells her that her real name is Flor, Soledad encourages her to remember who she is, despite La Bestia's attempts to erase her identity. Later, after Chico's death, Father Jimenez offers to bury him in their cemetery from migrants who died on the journey. Though Pulga initially refuses, wanting to take him home to be buried beside his mother, Pequena gently reminds him they can't go back. Chico wouldn't want that. In Altar, when a man and his vicious dog attack them, a nun emerges from a church with a fake gun, driving the man away. Inside the church's hidden rooms, she cleans and stitches Pulga's runes while offering them juice and crackers, simple kindnesses that move Pequena to tears. Perhaps most remarkably, when Pequena is rescued from the desert by two women, she discovers an impossible connection. One of them is the sister of Soledad, the woman who helped them at the shelter. This connection across thousands of miles feels like a miracle, making Pequena laugh for the first time since their journey began. These moments of kindness stand in stark contrast to the institutional cruelty they encounter, particularly at the U.S. border. When Border Patrol finds Pulga in the desert, they take him to a detention center, where he's locked in a freezing room with other migrants huddled under thin foil blankets. Later, he's transferred to a facility where they separate boys from girls, take their shoelaces, and lock them in metal cages. The juxtaposition of individual compassion and institutional cruelty highlights a central theme. Systems may fail, but individual humans still have the capacity for extraordinary kindness. These moments of connection across languages, borders, and experiences remind us of our shared humanity and offer glimpses of hope in an otherwise devastating journey. The final stage of their journey takes them through the Sonoran Desert, a landscape so harsh it becomes a character in itself. Here, in this liminal space between countries, between life and death, Pulga and Pequeña face their greatest challenges and undergo their most profound transformations. Their desert crossing begins with a coyote named Gancho, who warns them the journey will take 3 nights of walking and they must keep up or die. As night falls, they follow him into the vast emptiness, walking until dawn, when they reach a small hollow in the mountain to rest for the day. The desert's extremes are merciless, freezing at night, scorching during the day. The cold desert night numbs my fingers, feet, and the throbbing in my shoulder, Pulga reflects. I take deep breaths, trying to numb everything inside me, too. By day, the sun stares down like an angry god's eye, sucking every drop of moisture from their bodies. As Pulga's will to continue falters, Pequeña literally drags him forward, refusing to crawl into a hole and wait for death. "Stop this," she tells him through clenched teeth. "Why are you doing this?" But Pulga has reached his breaking point, telling her, "I don't care anymore." When Border Patrol finds them, an agent's predatory behavior toward Pequeña prompts her to flee into the desert, abandoning Pulga. This separation becomes the final trial in their journey, Pulga taken to detention while Pequeña wanders alone in the desert, certain she will die. In this moment of absolute desperation, Pequeña experiences what feels like death and rebirth. She leaves her body, floating upward into the cool desert night where all pain, thirst, and heartache vanish. She sees La Bruja again, who takes her hand as women's spirits enter her body, filling me with strength and will as I glow blue-white in the desert night. When she's rescued and later tells the woman who saved her, "My name is Flor, not Pequeña. I don't want to be called Pequeña ever again," we witness her reclaiming her identity. As the woman says her true name, Flor feels something inside my chest, a luminous flower bud unfurling, filling me with life and hope. Similarly, when Pulga is finally released from detention to his father's sister, his heart, that thing I've been beating to death, suddenly explodes, shattering into a million pieces. He screams so loud his aunt pulls over to hold him. But in this breakdown comes breakthrough. My heart thunders in my chest, reminding me I'm alive, reminding me who I am, reminding me I want to live, and that maybe I will make it. The desert thus becomes not just a landscape of death, but of rebirth, a crucible that burns away their old selves and forges something new from the ashes. By the journey's end, Pulga and Pequeña have survived, but at tremendous cost. Chico's death haunts them both, a constant reminder of the brutality they've witnessed and the irreplaceable loss of their childhood friend. They've been separated from each other and from everything familiar. Their grandmother's cooking, the streets they played in as children, the simple comfort of speaking their native language without fear or hesitation. Their bodies bear the physical evidence of their ordeal. Pulga with skinny, bruised legs and chest discolored black and blue, his feet blistered and raw from endless walking. Pequeña's face and neck are slashed with stinging cuts from desert plants, her skin weathered by exposure to relentless sun and wind. The emotional wounds run deeper than any physical scars. When Pulga showers at the detention center, surrounded by institutional walls and harsh fluorescent lights, he feels, "I'll never be clean again," that there's not enough soap to wash away this pain, this rot. The grime of the journey seems embedded in his very soul. When he finally speaks to his mother on the phone, her voice feels so distant, like she's outside the universe, highlighting how profoundly disconnected he's become from his former life. The familiar comfort of her voice now serves only to emphasize everything he's lost. Yet amid this devastation, small seeds of hope emerge, fragile but persistent. Pekena, now calling herself Flor, feels a luminous flower bud unfurling in her chest when she hears her true name spoken, a reminder that beneath the layers of trauma, her essential self remains intact. Polga, whose heart has been that thing I've been beating to death throughout the journey, suddenly feels it thundering in his chest, reminding me I'm alive, reminding me who I am. These moments of self-recognition become tiny victories in themselves. Their stories end not with triumphant arrival, but with tentative possibility. The sense that survival itself is a kind of triumph, even if the future remains uncertain. Polga faces endless days in the detention center, waiting for the courts to hear his case, learning to navigate a system that seems designed to break his spirit. Pekena slash Flor has found temporary sanctuary with the women who rescued her, but safety feels precarious, conditional. They've made it to the United States, but their journey is far from over. Each day brings new challenges of language, culture, and belonging. This ambiguous ending reflects the reality for many migrants who reach the U.S. border. Arrival doesn't mean the end of struggle, but the beginning of a new chapter filled with different challenges. The questions loom large. Will they be granted asylum or deported? Will they reunite with family members? Will they ever heal from the trauma they've endured? Will they find communities that accept them, or will they forever feel like outsiders? The uncertainty of their legal status hangs over everything, coloring even moments of joy with anxiety. The book offers no easy answers, instead leaving us with the understanding that survival comes at a steep price. Some things are irretrievably lost. Chico's life, their innocence, their connection to home, the simple certainty of belonging somewhere. Yet something essential remains, their humanity, their capacity for hope, their determination to create meaning from suffering. In their very persistence, they embody both the tragedy and the triumph of the migrant experience, broken but not destroyed, changed but not erased, carrying within them both the weight of what they've lost and the possibility of what they might yet become. Jenny Torres Sanchez began writing this book in 2015, haunted by news of unaccompanied children fleeing their countries aboard La Bestia. As a mother and daughter of immigrants, she couldn't stop thinking about these children, how only circumstance separated their fate from her own children's. She saw Polga, Ekenia, and Chico on that train and began writing their stories. This book is an imagining of an unimaginable journey that breaks people even as it delivers them to new life, she writes in her author's note. It's tragic that migrant children who survive such treacherous journeys are met with cruelty in U.S. detention camps where they're treated inhumanely. Through fiction, Sanchez bears witness to experiences that might otherwise remain invisible to many readers. She transforms statistics into human beings with dreams, fears, and unimaginable courage. She forces us to confront uncomfortable truths about violence, poverty, and the desperation that drives people to risk everything for a chance at safety. Most importantly, she reminds us that behind every migration story are individual human beings making impossible choices in impossible circumstances. Polga, Pekenia, and Chico aren't abstractions or political talking points. They're teenagers with favorite songs and inside jokes, with mothers who love them and dreams for their futures. By the end of their journey, we understand that the title, We Are Not From Here, carries multiple meanings. It refers not just to their status as migrants in foreign lands, but to their sense of dislocation from their own lives, from the people they were before trauma transformed them. Yet it also contains a spark of defiance, a refusal to be defined by circumstances, a determination to create new homes and identities when the old ones have been stolen. Their story reminds us that survival itself can be an act of resistance in a world that treats some lives as disposable. And in bearing witness to their journey, we're challenged to consider our role in creating a world where no child should have to ride La Bestia to find safety.